And AM 1400, 93.3 FM K1, and welcome into a Capital Call program, and we have our entire legislative team with us, and we'll say once again, good morning, Chairman Sears.
Good morning, Charlie, and good morning to our surrounding areas and all of the people in our good districts. Another very successful week. Still a challenging week.
Yeah, and I think the size of the hole, at least the number, appears to have grown.
Yeah. You know, a little good news there. Yes, we were expecting that, quite frankly, there were some of us that thought it would be larger than that. But really, let's come back to the double whammy, and the one that's really concerning is we will have another revenue failure in the 2016. And again, this isn't anything we've fallen asleep at the wheel. Remember, we built last year's budget on $57.55 per barrel oil. And when I left my home this morning, oil was selling for $27.29. So as you can see, that's just caused a crash in our energy sector. And again, it's around the world. Also, people got to remember that that generates that oil production money helps pay the bills, but it's not the big number to our budget. One of our big numbers is the income tax stream, mm-hmm. and the layoffs and those people no longer paying income tax is what's hurting us in 2016, which by all means affects us in regards to what we're going to do in 17. So another revenue failure, that's the second one. It will be a 3%. We'll announce all that next week. And then we'll officially have the Equalization Board meeting on Tuesday of next week at 10 o'clock, where all this will become official, and that number of $1.3 billion will be $1.3 billion less funds that we will have to build the 17 budget. And there's the journey that I've been on, and we're developing some great plans, some great ideas in regards to helping us on generating income. Or revenue, not income, but revenue to help us with this budget. And just, again, everything is still on the table. You know, credits, apportionments off the top. I will tell you there's three issues at the state capitol in regards to revenue side, and that would be eventually will be a proposal to look at increasing gasoline tax a small percent. Right now, history lesson, you pay every time you fill up. There's federal tax, state tax, and diesel tax. But Oklahoma sells tax on gas, not sales tax, but the tax on gasoline is 16 cents. And there's a proposal to look at raising that for like maybe be 2 years, or it could be if a gallon of gas goes back to $2 or $2.50, it automatically that tax comes off.
And we do get a break compared to many surrounding states.
Oh, there's no question. Arkansas is 21.3. Colorado is 22 cents. Texas is 20. New Mexico, I think, is 19. We're the lowest in our area, and Oklahoma is in the low tier of all 50 states. So, again, and let me tell you the other two taxes, and there is service tax, sales tax on service. That's going to be looked at. And another one that we'll look at is a tobacco tax, which I can tell you the governor's tied that to some proposals. Well, teacher pay raise, and there's just all these are moving targets. And to tell you today that some will move forward, I just can't tell you that today. But the good news is people are engaged at your state capitol. People that you have elected, trust me, are truly engaged in finding good solutions to this problem, and I am confident we will have a soft landing, meaning we'll balance the budget, we'll have some creative plans, there will be some cuts in regards to agencies, but I want to leave the minute, we're just not going to crash government, okay?
Okay.
I'll turn it to, let's go to the Senate, and then we'll let Representative Dunlap.
Okay. Well, thank you very much. Senator Ford, good morning, sir.
Good morning, Charlie. This is an absolutely wonderful morning.
I couldn't agree, but why do you say so?
Because if you think you're having a bad day, watch the evening news, and I think we'll all realize that as bad as some things seem at times, in the overall scheme of things, compared to so many people in this world, we are a blessed nation and a blessed civilization.
Absolutely.
And I'm very proud to be here.
Education-related bills in both chambers have been in the news recently. I'll get an update on whatever you want to talk about.
Well, and let's go back just for a second in the overall financial situation. And I say this a lot, and it's I truly mean it. If someone sees something they really like, don't get too excited. Right now, most people are hearing a lot of things they really don't like. But don't get too excited. And it's important that we get the citizens of Oklahoma involved in this discussion. There are several ways to do it. You know, in the legislature, we could just kind of get in a smoke-filled room and decide what we're going to do and come out and do it.
Those rooms are quite as smoky as they used to be.
Or sometimes, one of the approaches we're taking in the Senate is we're bringing a bunch of bills out, actually voting on them. Some of those votes I don't like. But it's a way of publicly letting people see what some of the options or alternatives are, and then we get feedback. So sometimes when we bring out a bill that we know won't go anyplace, it upsets people. But on the other hand, everybody starts thinking and say, well, we really dislike this bad, but what if we did this? So sometimes it's a way of generating the discussion and trying to get some thoughts coming out and helping us at the end of the day have something that makes more sense than what we were thinking about when we went into it.
On the consolidation bill, and I realize it got a long ways to go yet, many of the points on that, I think people are saying it's a pretty good idea to allow districts the opportunity to choose to consolidate if they wanted to. But a listener brought up a point to me, and if you want to comment, there was one part of that bill, it was after the allowing districts their voluntary, there was a sentence on there, something about a mandatory option for the state on consolidation.
Right, absolutely. And the way all the bills are written is if it passes, and in the case of mine, if you're a certain size, then you're required to either merge or be annexed, but it's up to the local districts on who they want to merge with. Do they want to do it with several other districts and create a new district? Do they want to go into an existing district? And if they are small and they have what I define as exemplary education, they can get an extension and they can continue to get extensions if they can show to the State Department that there are compelling reasons why they shouldn't consolidate or merge, like size or whatever. So there are a lot of options, but if a district just flat out says, we don't care what the law says, we're not going to do it, then, Charlie, we are a state of laws. The legislature and those that support it put that law in place. We're there. We're putting it in place because the majority of our constituents elect us. So I think we are speaking for the vast majority of citizens. So if we put something in place and someone flatly ignores it, then there's got to be consequences.
Right.
But hopefully, if they're small, they're doing a great job as they say they are, then they ought to get an exemplary education. Consolidation is a big topic. I truly do not believe we're going to save a lot of money, but I just as truly believe it is going to give us an opportunity to improve the quality of education. And the example I use a lot, we have a pre-K through 12 school district that has 63 students. And it is extremely difficult when you're educating 14 years of students with 63 students to be able to offer on an annual basis the courses those students need, the alternatives, options for AP and lab. Now, on the other hand, under my bill, if a district's doing it, more power to them. But if not, those children are not being well served, and we need to make sure the children get the opportunities they deserve.
Which, and I'm guessing some of those, I'll say high school courses, could be in that particular district, and I don't know who they are. You were possibly talking about 3, 5, 7 student classes because of...
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Although, when I grew up in southeastern Kansas, my first 4 years, I went to literally a one-room schoolhouse, first through the 8th grade, and one teacher,
yeah.
Mrs. Patterson.
My great aunt taught in one of those size classes, and they worked.
Yeah. But there's no one perfect way, and that's why, like I say, if they're exemplary education or if they're compelling reasons, schools don't have to do it.
Okay. Representative Dunlap, you one of your bills, I believe, was heard in committee this week.
Actually, was not heard in committee. It's just been put on the schedule to be heard soon. So a lot of work has been going into that. And so just to update the listeners, we've gotten law enforcement on board and providing their input into what they think is going to be best. And then we got a couple of the language issues worked out in the bill this week. So work has been going into it. And again, if you want to get online, I believe it's 2397 if you want to look it up on the House website. But the goal,
okhouse.gov.
Yeah, okhouse.gov, bill search, HB 2397. And the goal of my bill, again, is just to simply help people once they have paid their debt for misdemeanor offenses that they have committed, to be able to get back into the job market without a record hanging over their head. So you can read about the details of that, but there's still a long way to go on that bill, so I'm not declaring victory yet.
but it kind of goes back to the definition of a misdemeanor, that legally speaking, it's generally a petty crime. So
yes, sir. And we want people to be able to advance after they've paid what they need to pay and be productive members of society again without things hanging over their head. Now, one thing to note, that does not hinder law enforcement from using that record in other mistakes that might happen. So it's not tying the hands of law enforcement at all. And it's not. Hopefully, we're working to make sure that it doesn't incentivize a certain way of convicting or a certain way of fining or giving a punishment. So we're working just to get those kinks out of there. Yeah. So
we'll leave the rest of it to the judiciary.
I will make a comment about an article, very good article that ran in the Bartlesville Examiner this week regarding the governor's caution about the tax exemptions and the tax incentives that we have. So I've received some correspondence on this, and I've been actually, Chairman Sears is opening up the budget process so generously to all members of the House, and I've taken it on myself to join the team that's looking at the tax credits and exemptions and those sorts of things. And I just want to say that a lot of these programs are very good programs that are producing real results in our communities. The way that we say it is that they pay for themselves. And one of the things that we value, especially in Bartlesville, but throughout the state, is the historical building tax credit. And so I want to say that we're hopefully going to convince everybody that that is a worthwhile investment. There are several other tax credits that are worthwhile investments. The Quality Jobs Act pays for itself. And so I would concur with the governor that we have some opportunities that even in a tough fiscal climate, we don't want to get rid of because of the value we have of Oklahomans place on our history, on the arts, on beauty in our communities, on community life. One of the reasons that I favor going after exemptions rather than other sorts of ideas floating around the Capitol is that going after exemption helps our communities and our counties. And the government that is closest to the people, that people deal with most on a day-to-day basis, is going to be helped in those situations. And so I'm excited to see what ideas come to the table in that regard. And then I hope to be a significant part of the discussion as it goes forward.
Okay. Well, gentlemen, Chairman Sears, yes, sir.
Yeah, I think Representative Dunlap just nailed it in regards to where we are on exemptions. Only thing a little bit different I would add is I'll let the senator respond, but on the House side, our goal and our journey is not to do away with the credits, but there is a movement to maybe give them a haircut, and what I mean by that is a small reduction in regards to their what they're receiving. Now, what we want to make clear, and I know I speak for the Senate as well on this, I think, but again, I'll let him correct me if I'm wrong. Anything that we have in place now that someone's receiving a credit, a deal made, and the plan and the business, no one is even thinking about going back and modifying that. Whatever we do would be beginning a new fiscal year moving forward. So if we did anything in the House, it would be a percentage that we would try to take from all tax credits. For an example, The historical tax credit could be one. They get about a 20% return, not a return, but a credit. And if we did a 25% reduction there and they were on the list, they would get, beginning January 1, 2017, 17.5. But the program is still intact. We can still utilize it. And then my goal is, if we go down that path, is we do that for 2 years, and then reevaluate everything. And if the economy is moving forward, then if we go back to the original 20, and again, just pick one. I'm just using the historical tax credit because Representative Dunlap brought it up. Again, or we could pick and choose. But there is no question, the House's position is, we just don't want to do away with credits, but we need to have a thorough review and looking at, is there some that we want to be a reduction in them? But again, not enough to shut them down, but enough to also know that it needs to help us, and not that needs to help us, but the monies that are going to those credits for over the next 2 years could help us in the budget. So there's still a lot of conversation. That is not the plan. There is not a bill out there to do that. As the representative just said, we're still discussing, reviewing, and looking at it. And again, I'll close with this. The one that we absolutely are putting our energies around are the exemptions. And there's a lot of eyes looking in regards to those reforms and exemptions in our tax code.
Okay, thank you very much for that. And Senator Ford, I think you get to close it up.
Chairman Sears is correct. We don't want to totally do away with something that's been promised. But on the other hand, when we've had these short financial situations and we have reduced those agencies that receive appropriations, others like tax credits and those that are directly funded, they've not participated in helping cover the burden. Yeah. So to me, it is a fairness issue as much as anything. And I think we just need to broaden the base that's helping us in this deep financial times.
But reiterating what I think a comment you made roughly a year ago at that time concerning the promise made to nationally board certified teachers, mm-hmm. A promise is a promise.
A promise made is a promise kept. We've made that when we have made changes to the retirement systems. Retirement systems are significantly better because of changes, but it's not on the backs of the recipients. And other than that, Phillips 66, radio station, Charlie, thank you so much for allowing us to do this. We appreciate you all very much.
And that's Capital Call this morning.
At Phillips 66 Gas, we strive to bring you the best in performance gasoline. But now we want to find